Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
More rewards, more savings. With American Express Business Gold, earn up to $395 back in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select shipping, food delivery, and retail subscription merchants, including the $155 Walmart Plus monthly membership credit and $240 flexible business credit. Enjoy the benefits of membership with the Amex Business Gold Card. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-gold. Amex Business Gold Card, built for business by American Express.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Mark Verstein, founder and CEO of Recapt.
I fundamentally believe 90% of your Salesforce data should be client-facing and should be shared with the prospect. And you should literally be confirming that and have a really transparent and collaborative conversation with them. All right. Obviously, there's some stuff you want to keep private in there, but you should be on the same page. And if you're not, get them the hell out of your pipeline and go focus on deals that are actually going to move the needle for you.
This is Mark. He's a tech entrepreneur on a mission. He has a passion for building things from scratch. He especially prefers going from zero to one rather than maintaining existing systems. He's describing himself as someone who enjoys bushwhacking through the jungle and forging new trails. His entrepreneurial journey includes diverse experiences. He co-founded Tryhard Games, led sales at App Academy, a coding bootcamp. He has a remarkable history on taking on challenging situations. At Citrix, for example, he volunteered to manage their worst performing sales team, one where no one was making quota, and within 6 to 9 months, he transformed it into the top three revenue producing vertical. In June 2019, Mark founded Recapt, the customer collaboration platform that helps B2B sellers work more effectively with buyers. Their mission? To solve the messy middle of sales and change the way how B2B sales teams collaborate with buyers and close deals. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Mark to my podcast. We explore how he transformed Recapt from a side project into a game-changing deal collaboration platform, achieving a remarkable 44% win rate for customers. He reveals counterintuitive insights from his sales process optimization at Citrix and elaborates on his approach to building a remarkable software company. Last but not least, he shares his unusual incentive approach that helped him and his team to significantly grow a high-quality pipeline. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, why he would split the focus 50-50 between product and distribution if he would ever start again. Secondly, how he has increased close rates by deliberately blending in more professional services. Thirdly, how 10% of feature but 10x the marketing can outperform having more features but less visibility. And lastly, how the science of selling is 80 to 90% of success, while art is only 10 to 20%. Making the process repeatable matters more than individual talent. Well, hi, Mark. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, well, I was also looking forward to this. I picked up on your interview with GTM Pro, one of the podcasts that I keep going back to. So everybody listening to this and you haven't heard about it, check them out.
Definitely.
But yeah, exactly. The whole conversation that you had with them really appealed to me because, I mean, my whole life, my whole world is in the sales-led software space. And yeah, typically the deals in mid-market and mid-market and up that are complex, about high value, about a lot of stakes. And I completely see and hear all the things that you said there about the problems that companies and sales teams run into without having the proper technology these days. So love to talk about that. But before we start, a little bit about you. What drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
That's a big question. First off, thank you for the kind words. Yeah, it was a fantastic talk. If you haven't listened to them, go listen. I've learned a lot from their podcast as well. So it's really great stuff. For me, I think what really drives me is the creative aspect of building a business. You know, when I was young, I would draw and paint and, always come up with ideas. And someone who has very severe ADHD, and I feel like a squirrel most days, where I'm like being pulled in a million different directions. Yeah, I think I found like a calling where being able to wear 20 different hats in a single day is really energizing for me. And being able to, I think that the most fulfilling part of my day is when I hear customer feedbacks. Like no matter how tough a week has been, you know, you feel like everything's on fire, everything's broken, it's all shit. And then you get on a call for the customer and for like 45 minutes, they're just raving. And like, you're like, okay, it was a good week just off of that. So I think for me, it's like the creativity and the appreciation that you feel when you actually solve a really big problem for someone. It's an awesome feeling.
I don't agree more with that. It got me out of a couple of interesting weeks as well. So I hear you. So very good bridge. Also, potentially do a couple of questions I have regarding how you optimize for that you're actually solving very important, critical problems for customers. Because I wrote this book, The Remarkable Effect. And when customers start remarking about what you've done, you're really on a good track. So from what I saw, you started the business in June 19. So that's a good 5 years ago. What was the big idea behind the company? Or what was the big problem that you saw screaming that needed a solution like Recapt?
Yeah. So I think like most founders, I needed it for myself. And, you know, we talked a couple minutes before this began, but like, I never knew that this would be a huge business. This started out as just like a little fun, creative side project for me to, you know, just stay busy, right? When I was a seller, I wasn't the best. When I first started out, you know, I actually got put on a PIP and I was almost fired, right? And for me, like my whole life, people told me, oh, you should go into sales. You can like become friends with anyone. Like you're going to be so good at it. And like, I guess I put a lot of stake at that. And it didn't work out, right? And I was part of this small little startup back before startups were like this cool thing. And it just right time, right place. And I really wanted to succeed. And what I realized when I like sat down and really studied what the top performers were doing, right? What the global top reps were doing. I was lucky enough to sit down with them. And I realized they weren't like me. They weren't shooting from the hip. You know, they weren't doing something different every single time. They had a playbook. They had consistency. They had a process and they followed it. And so I shifted myself towards that thinking and honestly transformed my career. I went from literally almost being fired to 250, 300% of quota. Then rose into management, leadership. And my last role, I was a VP of sales. And, you know, I saw the same thing for my reps. I saw people that were really great at the art of sales, but maybe they didn't have the science of selling down. And unfortunately, I think the science of selling is 80 or 90% of it. And it's something that's repeatable and it could be done by anyone, no matter their skill set. That way you can let the art kind of shine and be successful and kind of just started out from there.
Yeah. So you decided, okay, what do I need in order to make this something that if sales goes beyond me, I mean, a lot of other people can do it. And I hear you. I mean, I actually responded to one of your posts today with a big smile because I saw what you were just telling. You were actually telling it also in the post. So exactly the same thing happening at Unit 4, the company I used to work for. People that were really, really good, other people that were not that good at all. New people coming in, and they had to kind of follow the playbook that worked, kicking and screaming, because they knew how to do it themselves, until they understood and nailed it. And then we actually said, you can change the whole thing once you understood it and nailed it. So, then they never would again. So good. That's you started building that. Understand also like why this is something that is so powerful once you start using it that way. You already said you were kind of making your quota to 200-300%, and that's the dream of every software company, I guess.
It's a very good time.
Exactly. So, but it was June 19. AI was just coming into play. There's a lot of ways you can start to explore how you build these solutions. The sales tech SaaS space was already, I think, pretty much booming, like the marketing one.
Yeah.
What I'm always interested in is like, what were those first choices that you took that have proven to be fundamental for where you are right now? Because, it's so hard to get started. And it's all about making the right choices, especially when you're on a limited budget.
Yeah. So I'll be the first to say, I think we made a lot of bad choices. And as a CEO, I feel like I probably made every mistake that you can make. And so like now that we're 5 years in, this year, you know, my co-founder and I sat down, we kind of realized we're almost like second time founders now, because we had, you know, when we first started Recapt, there was no other platform in the space like this. We were the first ones, and we were trying to, you know, go down this rainforest with no path as we're like charping down and trying to figure it out. Now, you know, and especially in the last year, I think the space has really started to blow up, and, you know, it's helped kind of solidify. But what's been really interesting, where I think we did really do a great job initially, is the initial vision for the product. Last week I was looking at some mockups from 2018. They look very much 90-95% the same as what the product looks like today. And for those anybody listening that doesn't know what Recapt is, you know, kind of one of the biggest things that spurred me to start this is, so I was a VP of sales. I looked at our tech stack and I realized everything that we had invested in was aimed around top of funnel, right? We had outreach, we had Seamless, Zoom Info, we had all of these tools for booking a meeting, but that is probably the first 1-5% of the buyer journey, right? That's when the hard work starts. So we have all of this stuff at the top. Then there's this messy middle where things just kind of happen, you know, for 1-24 months, and either you lose a deal or you win a deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I fundamentally believe that most tools that we have don't actually help reps close deals. And more importantly, they don't help buyers buy. And that's why sales cycles haven't really changed. If anything, they've gotten worse. And close rates in the last 20 years haven't moved either, right? It was, 15-18% close rates 20 years ago. It's 15-18% close rates now, and despite all these different tools. And so you have that. And then you have the complexity that's happening, right? There's more stakeholders. When we first started thinking about Recapt, like the average stakeholder, I think it was like 5.3 in a deal. And now it's like 15. And so even that felt like a lot. And so you have this chaos and all of these different tools, and it just creates this shit show where it's really hard for anybody to know what's going on, right? Reps don't know what they're doing. Buyers don't know how to like sell internally when you're not in the room. And then leadership is hounding reps to update Salesforce so they have some idea of what's going on, right? That's the only way that they have visibility. And so created was a collaborative portal or deal room where you're able to unify all of your content, put everything in one place, share it with the buyer. Because, and this is what I talked about with the GTM podcast as well, the only answer, in my opinion, to complexity and to chaos is collaboration. Right? You have to work together. You have to be able to collaborate. And so we created essentially the first deal collaboration and kind of deal management platform.
Yeah, completely agree with you there. Because funny how you can solve that indeed. If you solve the collaboration part, that you've made so many things indeed easier. I liked indeed what I saw on your website, making buying and selling easier. And I think on your LinkedIn profile, I saw your heading, ensure every process is followed so forecasts are accurate. And that brings a couple of memories back. At the company I used to work for, we had it a couple of times that MDs of the different countries handed in their estimate three in August. And then in the first country managers meeting, everyone was saying, we're not going to make Q4. Like, wait a minute, there's 2-3 weeks passed.
Yeah.
What happened here? So, yeah.
Well, it's all, if you think about it, right, it's all like a game of telephone, right? A rep, they're like, I have happy years. This customer told me that they love what I have. Sure. Like, we're going to go. And so they're 20 or 30% off. They pass that to their managers. That's 20 or 30% off. They pass it to their directors and their VPs. And by the time it hits top line, like, it's just a guess at all, right? And if people actually, if it was really easy for reps to actually follow their sales process, you wouldn't need tools like Clary and these forecasting tools, because you could just directly look at what the outcome should be ultimately.
Yeah. Now, you made a point about that win rates haven't evolved over the years. You know, I think you mentioned something around it was 20%, now it's 80% or something in the same range. Has it also maybe got to do with the fact that people are just saying, that's normal, that's good enough? Because, I mean, I see the same thing. And I know that companies can always get to 40, 50, or 60% win rate. But it needs, you need to make a couple of choices. And the choices are not made.
I don't think, it's a great question. I don't think that people are happy with the result. I do think that they don't know that you can actually do things, because very few organizations achieve anything past 20%, right? Like 30% is regarded as incredible. Like, for example, our customers, the average win rate in recapped is 44%, right? And like, that's a crazy number, but it goes to show, right? Collaborating with your prospects gets you deals. But I just don't think, like, it's always been the way that we've always done things, right? Oh, you know, we always email clients, we always do these things. It's just like the way that the process has always been. And so nobody knows any better, right? Like, if all you've ever ridden is a horse and someone pulls up in a Porsche, you're going to be like, what is this thing? Like, I'm good. I've got a horse, right? Like, I've always ridden a horse. And so like the change management and the evolution, I think, is frankly like the biggest challenge. But eventually, like, this is just going to be common stakes. And it's like, oh, you're not collaborating with your customers? What do you, you know, in the 90s? So
true. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you mentioned, before I ask, okay, so what has been an early decision that appeared to be really important for the success that you have right now? He said, we literally made any mistake in the world. And when you actually now feel a second time founder, even though it's the company still, was what has been the hardest nut to crack on this journey? Can you kind of recall a moment where it almost felt like a crossroad?
Yeah, I think there's probably two, maybe three really, I guess, big lessons. You know, it's the end of the year. I do a lot of reflecting at the end of the year, try and plan for next year to do better. I think like most first-time founders, my co-founder and I really overemphasize on product and not enough on distribution and marketing. And as a salesperson, I don't think I ever had the respect that marketing deserved until becoming a co-founder, becoming a CEO here, where, you know, I was just like, oh, you just pick up the phone and you dial, right? And that was easy when I was working for Citrix and everyone knew the brand. But all of a sudden, when you're a single person, nobody's ever heard of you, it's completely different. And I don't think I really truly respected that. So if I were to do it all over again, I would focus 50% of the time on product and focus on distribution, right? Because, well, you know, candidly, like what we've seen is like, we have some competitors that have come out more recent than us, you know, similar space, but with maybe 10% of the features, but they have 10x the marketing. And, you know, maybe they're in deals that we're not in, right? The good news is like, whenever we do a head-to-head, we do win those deals, but it's always something, right? And the other piece I think is hiring. I, you know, again, when I was at Citrix, I'd hired literally hundreds of reps. And so I had this ego going in. I was like, oh, I know how to hire. And I know, you know, I'm really good at this. No, I was terrible at it. And so hired a lot of people, I think, that just weren't good fits for the stage that we were at. We overhired, we scaled too quickly, and we didn't fire quickly enough. And so I think it's really, in hindsight, I would have just been more focused and more precise and taken more of like a sniper approach versus a shotgun.
Exactly. That's a very common one, by the way. The first one, I like that you're saying that, because it is indeed true. And it's all, it's very much has to do also with the, where you're coming from as a founder, and founders are on the technical side, it's almost, yeah, it's logical. It ends up in this squeeze, like 80-20.
Yeah.
But you got a point. And it gets you thinking. Even though these days we, of course, are not in the growth at all costs anymore, it remains a very critical piece of the puzzle. Because at the end, what you say, if the only way to win a deal is to get into a deal. And these days, I think I recently heard a statistic of 73% of the whole buying process happens before they even start contacting you. So yeah. There was a quote that triggered me. It was about the people that don't end up calling you it doesn't end up in your P&L or it doesn't end up in your management report because you don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they can have the best win rate in the world, but if you're winning 40% or 44% out of 10 deals or 100 deals, it's a massive difference. Good.
Absolutely. And I always think of it, like, you know, you always hear, like, with that statistic, people are like, oh, you know, you don't need salespeople, you don't need this. And I think that's really wrong, right? It's just where most people need salespeople is later, and they want them to be guidance. They want them to help guide and consult them on the purchase, right? So, like, for example, went and bought running shoes a couple of weeks ago. I knew that I wanted running shoes. I had a direct problem. I got there and I didn't know what the hell I was looking at, right? So I needed someone that was an expert to tell me, what is the difference? Why do I want A6 over a Hoka's or whatever? And really, that's the goal of salespeople, right? It's to be that expert, help guide them, make sure they're even the right fit in the first place, and then get out of the way and make that purchase as easy as possible.
Exactly. Yeah, and of course, there's this whole movement. I mean, last week I had Wes Bush on the podcast, who, of course, is the advocate of product-led growth.
Well, yeah, great guy.
For certain products, yeah, exactly. That friction of sales is just not needed. You know, why would I need a sales if I can actually buy and put my credit card on there and just go? But like you say, there are so many products out there that are mission critical, that are crossing many different departments. And when the wrong type of decision is taken there, you have to bring a company down to its feet. So talking about the whole process of, you started in a very, very busy space. I mean, every year I see those slides with all those logos on it, and the logos get smaller and the slide stays the same. But how do you build for differentiation? Have you done anything specific in the beginning whereby you started thinking, okay, what is our moat that we're building? Or did you kind of do it in a later phase?
Yeah. So actually, I think it relates to your earlier question where you said, you know, like, what did we do right from the beginning? From day one, our vision for Recapt was always to be the operating system for revenue, right? So we don't care what tools you're using. We want to help be the plumbing that brings all of these tools together into a single place or a single pane of glass that makes it really easy for your reps. And that's a really big lie that I think Salesforce told us 20 years ago, right? That's what it was supposed to do. But now we've realized it's just an expensive database at the end of the day. And so I think for us, the way we've thought about that has always been a differentiation. And with that, like, it becomes a really big focus on process, whereas, you know, thankfully, a lot of our competitors focus so much on content. And don't get me wrong, I think content is important, but I've never won a big deal because I sent them the right PDF, right? I won the deal because I did 300 little things better than the competition, right? Or I elicited the trust, or I built, or I told them that we weren't even a good fit in the first place. And then that sparked really good conversations. It's very rarely around content. And for us, that kind of like that operating system that brings everyone together, that has been always front and center. And I think now with AI, it's just going to explode even more. Like, we've got some really cool things planned for this year. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah. Well, of course, then everything is going to be AI'd, whether it's Gen AI or agentic AI. I mean, all the flavors that you get, of course, there. But at the end, it's not the word AI that is doing the magic. It's solving a problem in a way that we couldn't imagine before. And I think that's where the excitement comes also for me. You mentioned a very important thing, and it's a thing that a lot of people don't think about, because they think if we have a lead, we have to close it. And that's where losing a lot comes from. You made a point between the lines here, telling people they were not a good fit, meaning you qualify out, And that drove a lot of good conversations. Can you give an anecdote on that or elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. So on average, our customers, because we have a lot of data, right? We've been doing this 5 years. We've got, you know, 100 plus customers, 70,000 something deals. The disqualification rate usually goes up anywhere from 10 to 30, 40% for our customers when they start using Recapt. And when you first think of that, you're like, oh no, like marketing paid all this money for ads. But what it actually really does is it gives reps more time to be able to focus on the right opportunities so they can go deeper, so they can think about it, because there's an opportunity cost for every hour that you spend, right? If I'm spending an hour with a bad client or someone that we're just not a good fit for, that's one more hour that I'm not sitting there thinking about what are the strategic initiatives for this company next year? What did they really mean when they said that one thing, right? And those little small things, I think, really start to accumulate. And, you know, one of my, I guess, like contrarian thoughts, and that we designed Recapt purposely this way, is like, I fundamentally believe 90% of your Salesforce data should be client facing and should be shared with the prospect. And you should literally be confirming that and have a really transparent and collaborative conversation with them. All right. Obviously, there's some stuff you want to keep private in there, but you should be on the same page. And if you're not, get them the hell out of your pipeline and go focus on deals that are actually going to move the needle for you.
Let me make a small interruption here. Mark just made an excellent remark that instantly sets their solution apart from alternatives. The focus on getting a customer on the quickest route to disqualifying. Because the sooner you get to that clarity and honesty, the better it is for your customer and you. Disqualifying 30 to 40% more results in winning 2 to 3x more, and that matters. It's a trait remarkable software companies master. They focus on the essence, and they create new value possibilities and aim to be different, not just better. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview. Yeah, exactly. It's sort of counterintuitive for people. I mean, I've mentioned a number of times in the daily post that I make, it's that, yeah, start seeing the conversation with a customer as an audition for the customer, why they are a good fit for you rather than the other way around. And yeah. I've also seen a very interesting conversation going on when you say to a customer, okay, well, we think we can help you with this, this, and this, but here's a couple of red flags, and as a consequence, we better not do it. And they start selling to you why they need to be a customer. But it's fun. You talked about...
Go ahead. This might get me in trouble, but... something you just said kind of reminded me of it. Like, I do think dating and sales are very similar, right? And so if you show up to every single date and you're like, Tone, I'm a good fit for you. Here's why, right? You're going to come off desperate and it's not going to be a good look in the first place, right? And your chance of success are going to be small. Now, on the flip side, if you're like, listen, I want to make sure if you're a good fit for me, because I have respect for my time as well, and we're able to talk through it. Now, all of a sudden that changes that dynamic, right? And hey, if I'm not a good fit for you and you're not a good fit for me, great. We're all adults. We'll help point each other in the right direction. Best of luck, right? Now, all of a sudden, there's this trust versus like this neediness that comes through, and it's just as unattractive for your prospects as it is for a date.
Well, I mean, at the end, it comes down to, okay, we want to work with customers where we can really make the biggest possible difference, because these customers turn out to be fans, and fans stay longer, buy more, bring more friends, and so on. It's a win-win for everybody. And you're also making a point with that, with the process, the whole goal at the end is to identify all the key points to help the customer buy, to help the customer make the right decision. And that's a responsibility. Yes. You know, and the right decision is not that they choose you. The right decision is that they make the right decision, even if they don't choose you. And of course, the whole thing there is to do that as fast as possible. Because every time I speak to companies in this space, sales and SaaS companies, and I hear about the number of deals in their pipeline, and it looks all great and fancy. You see the average days these deals are in the pipeline, 150 days, 200 days, 250 days, and they are deals of $8,000 ACV.
Yeah,
something is wrong. So you talked about that journey from 2019 to where you are right now, more than 100 customers. What have you learned? What is one of the big takeaways from getting towards those 100 customers? What is a big lesson learned there?
Yeah, you know, I think something that was really counterintuitive for us, one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we hear from our customers repeatedly is that the platform itself is great, right? We love it. It's great. It's good. But what's just as much value, if not more, is the support, the training, the enablement that the team provides to be able to help them be effective, right? And, you know, going to that point, one of my first like disqualification questions is I tell people why they should go with Recap, because, you know, this isn't something like, yes, getting the tech up and running is really easy. We could do that tomorrow, but we need to make sure that there's alignment between why we're doing it and that leadership is also bought in, because it is a new way of selling. It is additional steps, right? It can be harder and uncomfortable for people to have these really candid conversations with your buyer.
Yeah.
But if you do that, there are really great results that come from it. And so making sure that, you know, we're teaching how and why and when and where to do these things, that to me, I think I underappreciated how much value that really is, right? And even charging more for professional services actually increased our close rates in those deals.
Makes a lot of sense at the end.
Yeah.
Because the customer wants value out of it, you know, and they pay for value.
Yeah. Well, and they want confidence that they're not exactly going to look bad in front of their peers, right? That they chose you and now nobody adopted it. And now, you know, they just spent however much money.
Yeah. Now that does, I mean, of course, the knowledge and the wisdom that came out of the jolt effect, whereby it's not so much anymore about fear of missing out, but fear of messing up. And that's a real thing, especially in those deals where it's about a lot of money. And like you say, if someone is recommending this platform because he believes in it or she believes in it, and then nobody's going to adopt it, you're going to look pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's all about that. I saw that, well, you mentioned already that you work for Citrix, you were the VP of sales there. But what I picked up from, I think, one or another interview that you did was that you were at some point deliberately put to work on underperforming sales teams and then turning those teams around because it sort of became your thing. But So what have you learned from that, a counterintuitive leadership principle, from doing that? And how has it helped also to make Recap a better platform?
Yeah, so that was actually really, really fun. So that was at Citrix. When I was a sales manager, we had, I don't know, 13, 14 different verticals and industries that we would go after. And obviously, you know, there's some that are underperforming. And so for whatever reason, you know, my manager at the time realized that I really like to compete and I get really, really into competition. And so he threw me onto literally the worst performing team at the time. There was like no hope. They were like 10% of quota pretty much consistently. And that's really where I think I kind of got my first glimpse of like first principle thinking, where you come in and I don't care how things have been done. From today, if we were to start over, what would things look like, right? And so maybe that means some people have to go. Maybe that means incentive structure. Maybe there's, there could be a million different reasons, right? And so I actually had a lot of fun for about 2.5-3 years where like every 6, 7, 8 months, they would take me and just throw me onto the worst performing team after we got it to like the top 4, top 5. One thing that like we helped institute is at the time, you know, every AE was expected to book, you know, 1.5 demos per day on a given day. And what I realized is that, you know, people were hitting those numbers pretty quickly. And then for the rest of the day, they were just kind of sitting around because there was no incentive to really go above and beyond, obviously outside from, you know, earning commission. And as a rep, I was able to book 6, 7, 8 meetings a day pretty consistently. And so I implemented a go home early goal that if you hit 5 demos in a day and you don't have any more calls for the rest of the day, you're good to go. And so what ended up happening is our average went from like 0.75 or whatever to literally 5 demos per day. People were still leaving at maybe the exact same time, but they didn't feel like they had to be there. And so instead they would go play some ping pong, they'd go, you know, hang out with their friends, and then 4 or 5 o'clock rolls around, then they realize they're still there and they'd leave. But all of a sudden, one of those teams that I would implement that, like we'd go from, again, you know, 5-10% attainment to 150% because now we have 5 times the pipeline that we had, right? And then So that ended up being adopted by the entire team after a while, and like go home goals were, I got in trouble initially for it because people were like, no, like, you know, people should be enjoy working. I'm like, well, people are also incentivized, right? And if they have kids at home and, you know, they want to go to the park, whatever, like if they're booking five times more what they're supposed to do in a day, who gives a shit?
Exactly. It's sometimes so counterintuitive how people start behaving when the metrics are the metrics. I recently heard a story from, I think it was Matt Weddercup from Dream Influence. And he made his targets big time, revenue-wise, but he didn't make his hiring targets. And he got beaten up by investors. So, what better kind of thing to do than to grow your business with the same number of people and do the dream thing? So it doesn't make sense.
Well, what is it? It's like the saying, it's like, show me their incentives and I'll show you their performance, right? Or like, it's so true.
I want to go back. Well, I mean, I love the anecdote. So you started working and building the platform and starting to grow it. Like I said, it's a crowded space. How did you go about positioning this in a way that you stood out in the beginning and got the attention and possibly even more important today?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was really tough. And I still don't think that we've really cracked the true potential of it. But because there's so many different things that Recap can do, right? It helps consolidate everything in one place so that you're getting rid of the chaos. It's helping reps standardize the process. It's helping the buyers be able to sell and have those conversations internally. It's giving leadership ability to have visibility. And and by my very nature, I'm not a product marketer or anything, right? And so being able to distill that down into something that is easily understood and can be explained to my grandma is really tough, right? And so I think we're just now finally, I think, starting to do a good job of it. And it was really simplifying it, right? It's not all of these things that we could do. It's painting the picture of the pain that people realize, which is you look at your inbox, there's 500 things in there, right? And if you're a buyer trying to go and get permission from, you know, your team and build consensus internally, you're living off of a spreadsheet that a rep sent you or PowerPoint slides and everything is just scattered and it's just not a good experience. And like focusing on that has been really good for us, but it's definitely something we can do better on.
Always, right? And it keeps the thing is also it once you have it and it works, it never set in stone because there's all these dynamics that go by that the customer are dealing with. I mean, their life is getting more challenging. Their aspirations go left and right. So it's never set in stone.
Yeah, the messaging that worked in 21 and 22 didn't work in 23 and 24, right? Because the environment changes, the priorities shifted.
Exactly.
Budgets shifted. So we had to you always have to reinvent yourself, I think, ultimately.
Yeah. Any lessons that you learned from there? Because at some point, I think you see that it's sort of topping off again. And
I think one of the bigger lessons that I've learned too is literally just follow the data. You know, so many of my decisions would be just based around gut feel, right? It's like, oh, I feel like this messaging is better, this resonates or whatever. But literally just looking at the data and be like, actually, no, this one's outperforming this one by 2x. So always be testing, always be focused on A/B tests. Just literally like objectively look at the numbers.
Yeah. And that data these days is easier than ever, but you have to, of course, have an eye for it. So looking at the time, about the data, when you face conflicting priorities in the data, what is your go-to method in order to then make the decision? Is that still gut feel or is it testing?
Yeah. So if you can test something really, really quickly, we usually just try and test it, right? If it's, hey, 1 week and it's either way, like it's not going to move the needle for us. Like, I think Jeff Bezos had a really great quote about this, right? It's like, well, is a decision so set in stone that you can't ever change it? If so, then take more time. But if it's something that can be changed a year from now pretty easily, then like, who cares, right? What I try and do though, for me that helps is I will literally storyboard out the paths that things can go in, right? So I'll say, okay, if this happens, then what are the good, bad, right? And I'll literally create like on my whiteboard behind me, like paths, right? And sometimes like it could be 20 different paths. And then I look at the decision and I'm like, well, this one probably has a 70% better outcome than this one because of all these potential paths and, you know, the worst case scenarios and the best case scenarios. So this one feels right. But like, I don't know. One thing I've learned as CEOs, you're probably wrong on most things that you're going to come up with. and there's never going to be one silver bullet or anything, or at least I'm wrong on a lot of things. And so it's just like, you know, get it out there, learn, and just get better. Like it's better to optimize for speed and learnings than it is for like accuracy and precision of the decision-making, in my opinion.
Exactly. Because the stars never align. Data is never exactly what you need. And as a consequence, you would then come to a halt. I like your point there. Last question. From the lessons that you've learned building the company, and the lessons maybe before that as well, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other aspiring tech founders or people that that want to grow, start growing faster?
I would say don't chase the hype. You know, really focus on something that you're actually passionate about. When crypto was going all the rage, like I barely know enough about crypto. Like I know the basics. It would have been really foolish for me to go and chase crypto just to get a payday, because entrepreneur, like it's hard, right? Like one of our advisors told us, like, you know, on a good day, you're still wrong 90% of the time, right? And so it's just like, maybe 5 years from now, and this is like true whether you're Travis Kalanick or, you know, whoever, Jeff Bezos, like you're probably wrong and you're just eating glass most days. And so like, if you're doing that just for like a payday or something that really doesn't inspire you, it's not going to matter. And you're going to burn out pretty quickly and you're going to say, screw this. So that'd be probably my biggest don't. And then the do is just do it. This has been, I'm so glad I went on this journey 5 years ago. Like I've grown so much as a person. I've matured so much. Like, you know, we talked about, I feel like a second time founder nowadays, and it just gets easier and easier. And like the common thing between, I think, successful founders is they just don't give up, right? It doesn't have to be the first idea, but they never give up on the journey. And so if you're thinking about it, like it's never going to be the perfect timing. You're never going to have the right bank account balance. Like just do it. And life is short. Might as well have some fun.
Wise words to end this with. So where can people go to find out more about Recapt or to say hi to you?
Yeah. Recapt.com, which we recently purchased. Recapt.io. You can do, just find me on LinkedIn, Mark Furstein. My email is mark@recapt.io. If you Google me, it should come up. But yeah, check us out. If you have any feedback, if you want to talk, like I love this kind of stuff. So if I can help in any way, you know, so much of what we do is literally just like being consultants for our customers and our potential partners. And so if I can help point you in the right direction or give you any advice on what we see in the go-to-market, we have some really great content coming out shortly, like the state of and a couple of things that I think will be really good for CEOs and go-to-market leaders. So send me a connection request and I'll make sure you get it.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Thanks for sharing the wisdom. I've made a lot of notes, learned a couple of things, and you got me thinking on a couple of things as well. So I'll keep following you in the next stage of the journey. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And this ends my conversation with Mark, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Mark Furstein, CEO of Recapt. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.